Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. It's hard to find anyone to disagree with the notion that we are living in crazy times. We've got a lot going on at so many levels. Aside from the pandemic, we have an election that will determine if the United States will continue as a democracy. China, Russia, you name it. So, how's your spiritual life at the moment? Believe me, I've spoken to a number of folks who are deeply connected to one sacred tradition or another, and they can be just as discombobulated as anyone else. The mindset seems to be, let's correct our major problems first, then get back to the meditation seat, the pew, the synagogue, whatever. Admittedly, when you turn on the TV and see many a street-fighting man going head-to-head with a motivated cop, it's hard to just breathe away that image. But so many thought leaders are trying to pull us back from the edge by advising us that the last thing we need to do now is give up our quest. It's not a matter of burying your head in the sand, but a wise strategy of retreating and advancing. And there's a great book out right now that steers us in that direction. It's called Spiritual Practice for Crazy Times: Powerful Tools to Cultivate Calm, Clarity, and Courage. It's written by my good friend Phil Goldberg, who's been a guest on this program several times over recent years. My travels take me to Los Angeles a few times each year, and it wouldn't be a complete trip if Phil and I didn't meet for lunch at a Whole Foods in West LA. Unfortunately, due to COVID, I haven't been there since January, so this conversation must suffice. But this time, you're invited to listen in. A few words about our guest. Philip Goldberg is the author or co-author of numerous books, a public speaker and workshop leader, a spiritual counselor, meditation teacher, and ordained interfaith minister. He co-hosts the Spirit Matters podcast, leads American Veda tours in India, and blogs regularly on Elephant Journal and Spirituality and Health. So we welcome to Common Threads, once again, Phil Goldberg. Hi, Phil.
Hi, Fred. Great to be with you.
Yes, absolutely. And I can't wait for my next LA trip, which I don't know when will be, but nonetheless, you always know in advance when I'm coming, and we try to get that lunch in.
Well, whenever it is, it will be before I get to Grand Rapids, Michigan.
This is true. This is true. So let's talk about the book. So oftentimes I ask people, what motivated you to write this book? But I think that your book is self-evident of that, right? I mean, we've talked about the crazy times. What I will say is, it's funny, in the beginning of the book you say, yeah, these are crazy times, but, you know, this book will be just as relevant in 2040 and 2080 as it is in 2020. And the first thing that pops in my mind is, boy, Phil's an optimist. So you really do believe we're going to be around in 2080. That's excellent.
And it would have been just as relevant in 1980 or 1960. Now, I should say I wrote that sentence in 2019. Knowing the book would come out in 2020, I keep being complimented for my impeccable timing to bring a book out in the middle of this pandemic. But, of course, it was written last year, and it was conceived when I thought, you know, things were pretty crazy. And what you have observed, as you put it in your opening statement, was going on, you know, over a year ago when I was working on the book. Could not have anticipated just how crazy things would get. And at the very last minute, when the big shutdown, the sheltering in place orders started happening, there was still a brief window of time where I could have made last minute changes in the book. And we decided not to, except for adding a brief paragraph at the end of the preface acknowledging the pandemic and saying what I'm about to say now, which is I realized that the material I drew from for the book, all the advice, all the guidelines, all the instructions and techniques, they're perennial. They've worked in the past, some of them many, many centuries ago. They've been proven. Many of them have been scientifically validated now in recent decades. And so I thought no matter how crazy things get, no matter how good things get, in any individual's life at any time, things can go haywire. And we need the refuge and the resilience that comes with spiritual practice. So I decided the material in the book is timeless, and it wouldn't make sense to reorient it for a temporary condition, we hope a temporary condition, like the pandemic and the coming election.
Yes, yes. Thank George Harrison for the mantra, all things must pass.
Yes.
So I gather that part of the reason you wrote this book is because of your relationships with other people in your counseling, in the spiritual communities that you are a part of to one degree or another. What have you been seeing in the last couple of years from people?
What really prompted it was people I know who are dedicated to a spiritual life to one degree or another, even veterans of the path, who were describing a state of anxiety, some fear, some anger, rage, and just disorientation because of the atmosphere that we've been living in the last few years. And some of them were sort of suspending their regular spiritual practices or had abandoned them. And there were two reasons for it. One, I would hear people, and this usually came from people who were not deeply committed to spiritual path, but who had relied on spiritual practices, principally meditation and yoga and mindfulness, were saying they're too upset. There's too much on their mind. They're, you know, disturbed, and so they can't meditate. And my response to that was, this is precisely when you need it the most, when we're under stress, when we're going through difficulties, and that if you're agitated, it's these practices that reduce the agitation, that restore calm, that bring about inner peace. That's their purpose. And so they are most useful at that time. And if you can't settle down, it tells me you don't have the correct practices. You haven't been instructed properly. There's many more things you can do so that your methods will be effective. The other group was so stirred to action by outer events that they said they don't have time for spiritual practice. They're just too busy. They're too engaged. And even some of them said they didn't want to lose their edge, that the angst they felt, the anger they felt, was fueling them, and they didn't want the calm that comes with spiritual practice. To which I said, it's when you're enraged and when you're overworked and so focused on the external dimension that you can make mistakes and lose your effectiveness. And that spiritual practice is not an escape. It's not a way of disconnecting from the world. No one's telling you to go live in a cave or join a monastery. But investing 20 minutes, half hour, whatever, every day to go inward and reconnect with your spirit and the what I call the sanctuary of peace that we all have within us is not just a refuge, it's a platform, it's a springboard into more effective action. People like Gandhi knew this. People, many, you know, great spiritual leaders would begin their day in prayer or meditation because it fueled them. It meant they could go and do what they have to do and maintain some equanimity inside and come to their work in the world with more energy and compassion and wisdom. And so that those observations gave rise to me doing an article about this, and then my publishers and I talked about it and said, you know, there's a book in this, and so that's how it evolved. And then things got really crazy.
You know, I remember a magazine article. Unfortunately, I don't remember the magazine. I don't remember the author. But the contents of this article have impacted me for decades now, because it was probably about, I'm going to guess, maybe 25 to 30 years ago. I read this article, and the crux of it was that people who strive for social change that do not have a strong spiritual foundation often flounder to the point where they either give up and sometimes even take their own lives. Mm. Two examples. Do you remember Mitch Snyder?
Yes.
Mitch Snyder and Abby Hoffman. And he talks about other people as well, but those two really stand out to me. And the reason, one of the reasons at least, if not the reason, is that spiritual people have a sense of detachment about them, that detachment from the results. Even Martin Luther King said, right, I've been to the mountain. I may not get to the other side with you. I'm not worried about that. And I think that that is one thing that can be strongly cultivated with a deep spiritual practice, is just the sense of detachment from results. But that's pretty challenging, isn't it?
Yes, and I would, just for the benefit of your listeners, point out that the kind of detachment you're talking about does not mean indifference. It does not mean you stop caring. It does not mean, you know, you don't want to be effective in the world. It just means you have an inner sense of stability and peace regardless of what's going on outside you. And in that sense, there's a detachment of consciousness or an inner state. But the other is you're not, as you put it, attached to the results, which means you do your work with energy and proper skill, but you're not focused on the outcome. And in that sense, you can do your duty, you do your responsibilities even better. You know, part of it also is this notion of compassion burnout. And with a lot of people, whether it's, you know, people in the healthcare world, social workers, people engaged in service, people who are social activists, for one cause or another, will often, you know, get exhausted. And you can't be at your best when you're exhausted or when you're fueling yourself with caffeine and you're agitated and so forth and you're not getting enough sleep. And spiritual practice gives you a more of the inner stability, inner calm, a sense of peace within the world of action. And I always think of it like athletes. The athletes we respect the most, the ones we wish we could be like, are the ones who, when the chips are down and the pressure is the highest, they're the guys the team turns to, because they're not only excellent at what they do, but they don't lose their cool. And the same thing is true in the armed services, in police, in you know, business affairs. You know, people who maintain their cool and can think clearly and not go off the deep end when there's pressure and you know, turmoil. We aspire to that, and spiritual practice is, it's one of the reasons I wrote the book, is because it's clear that the right kind of spiritual practices can give you that kind of stable platform for more effective action.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella. With me today is Phil Goldberg. He is the author of the book Spiritual Practice for Crazy Times: Powerful Tools to Cultivate Calm, Clarity, and Courage. Now, Phil, you are an expert in this simply because of your age and where you were at a particular time, because a lot of people who were not either born or really cognizant of what was going on in the late 60s, early 70s, think that we invented this kind of crazy time. But you and I have lived through a very, very depressing era in the late 60s. I mean, on one level, it was great because you had some of the most fantastic music that had ever come out of a studio, many studios. You had the raising of consciousness on several levels in terms of race relationships and women empowerment, etc. But you also had this damned war that just tore the country in half. And I remember feeling the pain of that alienation between, oftentimes it was generational. Here, it's interesting, the times we're living in, yes, it's true, we have sides pitted against one another, but it's not easily defined as generational, right? You've got people who are in their 20s and 30s on the same side as people in their 80s on both sides, if you will, of the cultural divide. So if you would tell us a little bit about your personal history. Because you do go into it in the book in terms of your college days, in terms of your political work and all that, and how you got involved in more advanced spiritual practice.
Yes, and I would add to your description of that era was not just the Vietnam War and the fact that we had a draft at the time, which was, you know, weighing heavily on the minds of especially young men. I was one of them. But also the civil rights movement. You know, we had just had the breakthrough laws in 65 and 66, voter rights bill, Civil Rights Act. Excuse me. But there was still horrible racism and backlash by white supremacists and riots in the streets. You know, in 68, there were the assassinations of Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy, and earlier Medgar Evers. And so it was a very, very difficult time. And one of the, you know, advantages of age is it does give you this perspective. And so, but the 60s were, you know, we didn't have a pandemic. And that's made everything that much more difficult to navigate. We also didn't have quite the polarization politically. I mean, there was a great deal of polarization, much more than people, you know, most people realize, between the sort of activist left and the backlash from the right wing, and you know there was blood spilled over that. But it was, at least in the halls of Congress, you know, there were liberal Republicans and conservative Democrats. You know, it wasn't quite the same thing. But, be that as it may, one of the other things that was happening quietly in the 60s while all this craziness was going on is there was a serious spiritual renaissance taking place. This is when people like you and me discovered the teachings of the East. And as I wrote about in American Veda, this was a huge renaissance revolution, spiritual revolution taking place simultaneously. I hope that our current chaos and craziness will also reveal in time a spiritual upsurge, an awakening of some sort. Sometimes it takes madness and despair and anxiety and confusion to turn people inward and to turn people to the powerful spiritual teachings of the world. But the 60s, you know, can be looked on, late 60s, early 70s, you know, in many ways as a model for the fact that times can be crazy any time, and this is, you know, there's precedent for it, and we get through it. Going back, you know, I've written a lot of historical stuff, as you know. I've had to look at American history. The 30s, the Great Depression, World War II, World War I, the Gilded Age, when, you know, there's so much. And there are certain patterns that seem to reveal themselves. Fear of the other keeps coming up. Fear of immigrants. Backlash against social progress. So in many ways, our crazy times are unprecedented. In other respects, you know, we've been through this before. And so we have to persevere, but at the same time, one of the things you learn is that there's things we can do on an individual level to protect ourselves, to preserve our health and our well-being and our connection to our spiritual lives and maintain some inner peace, and that we all have a responsibility. And one of the things I emphasize in my book is one spiritual practice we can all use is to make a contribution and make the world a little less crazy by doing something of value for other people, for people in need, or in the service of a cause that is important to you. Even small acts of service have a beneficial effect on the world, but they also are good for us. That's why every spiritual tradition emphasizes charitable work and service work.
Do you know if at this time there is a draw towards spiritual communities as there was in the 60s? Certainly in the 60s, there was a big back-to-the-land movement. People started up. They call them communes, and some of them were communes in the pure sense of the word. In others, they were just spiritual communities, but you had your own private property, and you had normally one partner, one spouse, whatever. Do you have your finger on the pulse of that right now?
I don't know, Fred, and I'll tell you one of the things that's different now. Yes, there was this move toward communalism and spiritual community, but some of it did not. It was even the scope of it was wider even than the attempts at creating communities. There were spiritual communities around a certain teaching, a certain tradition, a certain lineage, And people were living ordinary lives. You know, I was in New York City. I was in Boston in those years. I lived in San Francisco for a while. But there was always this attempt to be part of a spiritual community. You didn't all have to live together for that. You had regular meetings and you had regular gatherings. And people went to churches and synagogues and all the rest of it. Now, because of the pandemic, you can't do it. You can't gather in the same ways that you did in the past. So it's very hard to discern whether there are efforts like that, because the congregating together physically is impossible, or certainly limited. But there is this incredible reaching out on Zoom and other things. Like I would be in the middle of a book tour now, but all the travel had to be canceled and everything. And so I'm suddenly giving lectures and workshops remotely, sitting in my shorts in the living room, on Zoom. So people have this need, and I even have a chapter in the book about, one of the areas of spiritual practice that I explore is being with others in spiritual community, having the importance of spiritual companionship. I'll give away my age by saying the title of the chapter is A Little Help from Our Friends, but, many of the things I talk about in the book about the importance of spiritual companionship and the importance of going to sacred places and being in those places that have deep spiritual meaning for you, well, we're limited at the moment in the pandemic, and we have to find other ways to do it. But I think we won't fully appreciate, if there is a spiritual upsurge going on at the moment, I don't think we'll fully appreciate it, just like we didn't fully appreciate what was taking place in the late 60s and early 70s until much later when we looked back on it and said, my God, look what was happening in the midst of all this turmoil. It was a genuine spiritual search going on, and the introduction of new ways of being spiritual. Maybe that's happening now, too. I hope so.
Phil, we're out of time for this episode of Common Threads, but I would love to have you back next week, and we can continue this.
It would be great, Fred.
You're listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and my guest today has been Phil Goldberg, talking about his book, Spiritual Practice for Crazy Times: Powerful Tools to Cultivate Calm, Clarity, and Courage. Please join us next week here on WGVU.